Heute bei uns zu Gast im Bergzeit-Podcast die Profikletterin Nazim Eshki. Nazim wurde im Iran geboren und ist weitaus mehr als nur eine Sportlerin auf extrem hohem Niveau. Mittlerweile ist sie eine über die Szene hinaus bekannte Stimme für Menschen und insbesondere Frauenrechte. Und das eigentlich völlig unbeabsichtigt, wollte sie doch ursprünglich nur ihrer Leidenschaft, dem Klettern, nachgehen. Genau das wird ihr in ihrer Heimat aber zum Verhängnis. Das Nichttragen eines Hijab und Seilschaften mit Männern führen zu ihrer Festnahme durch die Sittenpolizei des islamischen Regimes. Doch aufgeben oder sich beugen ist für sie keine Option. Und ihre herausragenden sportlichen Leistungen ermöglichen es ihr, auch immer mehr in Europa zu klettern. Genau dort hielt sie sich auch im September 2022 auf, als der Tod von Mahsa Amini im Iran landesweit für Proteste sorgte. Aus einer mehrwöchigen Kletterreise wurde für Nazim plötzlich eine Reise zu ihrem neuen Lebensmittelpunkt. Seitdem lebt sie nicht nur in Europa, sondern nutzt ihre Stimme und Reichweite, um auf die Probleme in ihrem Heimatland aufmerksam zu machen. An dieser Stelle habe ich einen wichtigen Hinweis für euch, liebe HörerInnen. Wie ihr euch nach diesem Intro vielleicht schon denken könnt, ist diese Folge, ich würde sagen, mal ein wenig anders als sonst. Es geht nicht nur um unseren geliebten Bergsport, sondern auch viel um andere, teilweise politische Themen, wie zum Beispiel Menschenrechte. Nazim verknüpft diese beiden Aspekte, also den Bergsport und ihr Dasein als Aktivistin, in ihrer Person sehr stark miteinander. Uns als Bergzeit ist es sehr wichtig, auch diesen Facetten einen Raum zu bieten. Vor allem bei solch hochsensiblen Themen, über die wir in diesem Podcast sprechen, sollte jeder den Freiraum bekommen, sich Gedanken zu machen und eine persönliche Haltung einzunehmen. Das ist ganz, ganz wichtig. Bitte beachte daher, dass Nazims Aussagen ihre eigene, ungefilterte Meinung darlegen. Und noch ein zweiter Hinweis: Ihr hört jetzt im Folgenden die Originalfassung in englischer Sprache. Sollte euch eine Synchronisation in deutscher Sprache lieber sein, dann scrollt einfach nur eine Episode weiter. Hier habe ich meine Fragen auf Deutsch eingesprochen und Nazims Antworten wurden entsprechend dem Wortlaut auf Deutsch übersetzt und nachvertont. Egal für welche Variante ihr euch entscheidet, viel Spaß mit dieser Interviewfolge der besonderen Art.
Der Bergzeit-Podcast ist dein Podcast für mehr Bergzeit. Ganz egal, ob neben dem Gipfelkreuz oder auf dem Weg ins Büro. Wir wollen die Berge zu dir bringen. Immer und überall.
Hey Nazim, thanks for joining the Bergzeit podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me to the podcast. I hope it will be impactful and a lot of people would like it.
I'm pretty sure about that. Nazim, we start all of our interview podcasts with the same 5 entry questions. I'd say they're not that hard to answer, but we'll see. Are you ready for that?
Sure.
Do you want to give us a short introduction? Who are you and what is your profession?
I am an alpinist from Iran. I born in Iran, but I am definitely an international alpinist because I try to stay borderless and without the segregation for people. So then what was the next question?
That's basically it. The next question you already kind of answered. Where are you from and where do you live right now?
I'm from Iran. I live now in Europe. And basically, I'm living in the mountain.
That's not too bad.
Most of the time in the mountain. And so I try to see what is possible to do with my sport, and I do.
Sounds pretty nice. Which summit did you climb last?
I am mainly alpinist. It's not like conquering the mountain.
Yeah, it's more like routes and stuff, right?
Yes. I climbed a lot of sport climbing recently. Then I think the last highest routes or mountain we climbed were in Chamonix.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, that's a big playground right there.
Yes, it's our favorite place.
That's cool. What was your most impressive or even most beautiful mountain experience? Is there anything that stands out? I know it's a hard one.
Yes, it's difficult to say which one because everyone has its beauty. But what my favorite is when I can also see the sea when I'm on above the rock or mountain.
Yeah, that's nice. I've been ski touring in the Abruzzen Mountains last winter in Italy. And it's quite cool if you go up with skis and then you're on top of the summit and you see the sea as well.
Yes,
and then you ski down. And I mean, it's just like an hour or even less drive to the sea. That's amazing.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Oh,
that's pretty cool. And last one of the 5 is... Do you have like a certain philosophy of life or a guidance throughout life that you try to pursue?
I think my main philosophy is to, if you have power, not only use it for your own self, but also use it for others. And I think my philosophy came from martial art, because that was my first sport which I started, and with all the philosophy of martial art, which says you have to be powerful, but not for weak people. You have to defend a condition or situation which needs defense. So I stayed always with this philosophy.
Yeah, that's interesting. We're going to get a little bit more into detail later on, but before we dive right in, we need to give our listeners a little bit of context. So we're here at the Petzl Kletter Festival in a small town called Königstein in Franconia. So it's very small and traditional right here, but however, the festival itself is quite famous, at least within the climbing community.
Sure.
And one of the reasons for that is the fact that one of Europe's biggest climbing areas, the Fränkische Schweiz or Frankenjura, is just right at our doorstep. Have you been climbing here?
Yes, Frankenjura is my first ever wall or crag, if I can say it, which I have touched in Europe.
Oh, wow.
So,
how come?
When I got visa to be able to come in Europe years ago, because it always depends on the weather and friends.
Sure.
So I had friends which they were available in Frankenjura, and
okay.
Then when I came, I was just like, when I could get visa, I texted a lot of my messages, who is available, who is not. And so it was somehow guided me to Frankenjura, because I landed in Munich.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to other places which I wanted.
That's so cool. I think it's always interesting, because I'm originally from Nuremberg, so not that far away from here. And for us, Fränkische Schweiz is kind of like the neighborhood. And if we come here, it's more like, a lot of agriculture around. And it's, you're pretty connected and based to nature. And then you see all of the international people here connecting on the rock, because climbing is what connects them and what is like, the common sense for them. And that's so cool to see how a sport can affect that kind of human relationship.
Yes, sure, absolutely. Sport, especially in the mountain, because mountains are also connected, like mountain chain, they also connect humans. Humans are mountain, mountains are human.
Yeah, that's pretty cool that you had your first climbing in Europe here in that Frankenjura.
The historical.
What would you say? Is there anything quite special about the region here, the rock itself? Is there anything else compared to like the Dolomites in Italy or anywhere else?
For me, which I like long routes, I like multi-piece when I can get more view. Of course, I do sport climbing for training also, and projecting is also my favorite things to get stronger physically. For me, every rock can be very impressive and nice, because I love the movements. It doesn't matter what it is, but then the view is very important. What is very special in Frankenjura is the long trees.
Yeah.
They have really long trees, which are even taller than the walls
a lot of
the time. And that's, I love them. It's just, they're beautiful. They touch the sky. So it's also a part of beauty of the area. Of course, every area has the positive and negative aspects, but when you have a lot of routes, a lot of possibilities to get stronger, is a privilege for a climber.
That's absolutely true. So you said you've been sport climbing a lot in the most recent time. Are there any bigger projects you're pursuing right now?
Besides the sport climbing, which is, of course, there are different projects for my personal achievement and high number climbing. Beside that, I have this other bigger project together with my partner Sina Heydari, also from Iran. We started a project called When the Mountains Speak. Then this project is going to bring a lot of human rights and women rights movement. The name of the movements into the mountain. So we're opening new lines in different mountains. Of course, long routes, multi-pitch, prefer, especially trad, using mm-hmm. the trad climbing, then clean climbing.
Yeah.
Then we dedicated to the name of the human rights or women rights movement. And the first route we did in Chamonix, we opened mm-hmm. there. It's called Rise Up for Human Rights. Second route's called Woman Life Freedom, dedicated to the revolution of women in Iran. We opened it in Dolomiti. And we are going to continue this to bring the voice and echo the voice of every woman which is under pressure all over the world, not only in Iran, but of course, I'm from Iran and I'm more concerned about them, but I feel it's a matter for all the women all over the world, different countries. And I want to try to inspire other mountain people that if we are talking always about freedom, because mountain people, climbers are the one who are the most more than every other sport talking about freedom.
Actually, the whole outdoor community, right, is talking about freedom. That's what they
exactly.
like.
Exactly. But then when it comes to the action, or when it comes to their an opinion, social impact, they are the most silent athletes or like humans, because I see that other sports like football or volleyball, they learn much more than climbers to do something together in a bigger group.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the caring of the social movement
mm-hmm.
in climbing is much less than other sports. Like, we don't learn it really because we are very individual.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my feeling. And when it comes to the human rights, it's so difficult to talk about it anyway, because everyone can offend other one.
Sure.
And of course, I found that mountain people always bring this excuse that, we don't know so much. But if we are the sport who talk always about freedom, and why not to stand up for people who have pressure in life? And if you're privileged, if you can talk without being killed, why not to say something when you are standing on top of the mountain? Why just conquering and adding your name to the list of the one who conquer something? For me, it doesn't really make sense so much, because I started the sport with the philosophy of being united with others, and the sport is gives you a motivation to stay with other people, to compete with other people. Doesn't matter if you win or lose, anyway, it's very social. And it doesn't have, for me, any sense if it will be just about what I gain for my personal achievements. So all the athletes in the history which have been also being the voice for human rights, they inspired me to be also one of them, because I feel being the best woman or being the best person or first have to bring a message over it. Like, yeah. I am the best, and what?
Mm-hmm.
For what? Just go up this rock? Okay, that's amazing. But then what do you want to say when you take climbing off? A lot of professional athletes, they are nothing, basically. It's good to also have another aspect in life, not only the number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's totally true. So could one say that your achievements in the sport offer you the opportunity to have a platform, kind of?
Absolutely, right? Because we get achievement between a lot of people. So it's like a society that helps us to come to this level. Like, people before us, the older generation, made steps for us to mm-hmm. be able to do something. So it's good to make steps for the future. And when I have the visibility, I feel this visibility should not be only personal.
Mm-hmm.
It can be hand in hand with others together.
So that's probably what you meant, like saying everything in your life is kind of like connected.
Yes.
Right? Because when we were talking off mic, you were saying, I mean, every topic is connected with each other. Would you say you're more of an athlete or more of an activist or both at the same time?
No, I'm definitely an athlete because I started the sport from the very early age. So, of course, I have done much more sports than talking for or acting for any other reason. So through the sport, I gain a lot of visibilities. So I am an athlete which uses her platform for others. I don't even consider myself in a group of activists because I think we don't need to be activists. We can just be a human to say something. We don't need to go in a group to be able to talk. And if I'm not an activist, for example, then I have to be silent. This doesn't really make sense. I can, everywhere that there is something happens that I can be impactful, I have to say something. It doesn't matter if I'm an activist or not. And this is my opinion for every human being.
Mm-hmm. But do you think people criticize you for that? Because they could say, hey, you have to decide. I mean, like sponsors or any other person involved could say, hey, you have to decide whether you want to be active. And I mean, you could say political in a way, or if you want to focus on the sport. Do you face such challenges?
Yes, of course. I think people talk a lot. Of course, everybody has an opinion, and especially brands or, you know, like the one who have the money in their hands, they try to decide for us. But I mean, I came from a country with a lot of restriction and a lot of oppression above my head. I didn't let them to decide for me. So I was always standing in front of them, even if I was getting arrested or I've been lucky that I am not dead now by now. But I didn't let the Islamic regime decide for me. So here also, I get criticized with a lot of brands and athletes. I don't let them to decide for me. It's if I stand in front of the Islamic regime, the others are nothing for me. Basically, I understand that I am much, much more powerful as a human being, like each of us are, but we just have to feel it. So in this way, when Mahsa Amini died in September 2022, so I started to speak out because of war crimes in Europe that time. Then I asked a lot of athletes and a lot of, you know, like companies that they have to stand up also to support this movement because the women were dying and they were just getting shot and arrested and tortured and raped. And it was very terrifying and sad. So I asked my sponsors to talk about this, to make an interview with me, or just to speak something small, even small about
just give it some media presence, right?
Exactly. And they refused, like DMM. DMM refused directly. They said, we don't want to lose our client. Because they have a lot of Muslim clients in Saudi Arabia or like in Qatar. And also they sell other things, not only climbing equipment. So then Rab released one interview that was amazing, but they didn't follow up anything else. Like I did, I opened these two new routes with my partner and they were like, of course, they are a really amazing message for human rights from a climber. No matter where I am from, when I open a route, normally sponsors are reacting on it.
Yeah.
But they just ignored everything I've done. I've been in Cannes Film Festival. I carried the message of freedom for women there. And I've been just getting ignored all the time by my sponsor.
So, just because of the fear of being too political?
Yes, but I think, even I don't think, it's definitely... Of course, we are all political because we are living, we are eating product, we are like the global warming, everything is political these days. And if we want to say human right is also political, we can say, but human right is human right. Otherwise, we have to stop talking about Holocaust because Holocaust is politic. But why it is a matter of human right, but in other countries, in Middle East, when people are dying, is politic, is not human right. For me, that's what I started my my talk now. It's that people say many things.
Yeah.
And they are wrong. It doesn't mean that if a brand said this is political, it doesn't mean it's political. The whole people which are managing this brand can be wrong. And if I, as a human, I feel this is wrong what they say, and I believe in that. It is true because I'm also educated. I'm also, I have two eyes, I have ear, I can see what is happening, and they can see. But the problem is they look into my face, into my eyes, and they lie. And or they just ignore. They watch what I do, but they ignore it. Like, how can you ignore a woman from Iran opening new line, dedicating it to the human right, which is the best message for every type of people, man or woman, children.
And for every channel as well.
For everybody. And you just ignore me all the time. And I was really, I felt very disappointed. But I have also felt that I have much more value than just a brand, being sponsored by a brand. So I really feel if the brand is, the policy of the brand is too limited, it's the same as the Islamic regime. Is if they want to change us just to numbers, then that's not me. Mm-hmm. It's just, I feel I stay on my way. Of course, I have a lot of economic problems always because we moved from Iran and, you know, you move from one town to another town. You might had, yes, but you still have a lot of problem. And so imagine move from one country to other country. And now I moved from a whole continent to another one and without support and with a lot of difficulties, of course. But even in this difficult time that I needed support, I said, no, I don't need. I have the nature with me. I have the power inside me, and this fire, which I have it from my childhood, is it can no one can turn it off. Mm-hmm. So I'm not gonna give up. If the brand wants me to stay silent, it's impossible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's totally understandable. I think there were so many important things in there in the last couple of minutes. Let's dive a little deeper into it. First of all, I totally admire that. I totally admire your attitude and your willingness. At the end of the day, it's really special, I guess. Does it come naturally for you, or do you have to remind yourself every now and then, no, I'm on the right path. Everything I do is correct and good for me at the end of the day? Or do you worry and, you know, question yourself sometimes, like, hey, is it all worth it and stuff? You know what I mean?
Yes, it's such a nice and a very deep question, actually. Yeah. No, I am a human. I have weaknesses, a strength. I get low energy. I get hyper energy. Like, it happens also to me. Sometimes I feel like, why am I doing that? I make my life more difficult with this. Like, I know people who would also from Iran, who are living outside in Europe, they have the privilege to talk. They don't talk, they don't say anything, even they know what is happening. And also there are a lot of other women or men who are really active in being the voice. For me also it happens. I feel lonely, I feel powerless sometimes. I feel like, why every other athlete has support while I had this much more difficult path coming from Iran and doing something. For me, climbing a number is not difficult, mm-hmm. but the path which I have been through and without any support is really a tough path. It's not a normal, easy path for a woman in Iran. Yeah, it's a lot of things. Yes, but I also feel tired, and then I sleep next day, I wake up full energy. And I really feel I'm, of course, very connected to the nature, not only in the spiritual way or for like a fashion way that we say. Of course, we all love the nature, but I really gained a lot of power also in Iran when I was away from the society in the mountain. Nature and the mountain were my only friends who I felt that they understand me. And so I was getting rejected a lot of time from a lot of societies, like also in Iran, because also my parents have never supported me as an athlete. Mm-hmm. Also for my ideas, I've been always ashamed of the family because I was wearing different colors. I was very visible, which is not really fine in Iran. And then from the school, I've been kicked out from the school sometime. And then Iranian Federation, even though I was the top climber in Iran, even within the man, I opened lines which also man didn't climb it. Like I was, so even that they never talked about me because I was never covered. So I mean, I've been always rejected with different societies, but I think I just had myself I found myself the best friend of me and also with the nature. I think that was my privilege from mm-hmm. the beginning, and I still kept it with me. But honestly, beside all this difficult condition, it's unfair that I would say everyone was really against me. I had teachers, lecturers, I had friends, also boys, which they were supporting me mentally. So sometimes you just need a hand on your shoulder which said, I understand you. And I had these. And even though not my family, but I had friends like this. And then education, I think that was the key point, education and books. Mm-hmm. Because by education, I understand the value of humanity. Because when I was small, I wanted to be a boy. The okay. woman and freedom never existed in anywhere in Iran and in mindset of a child. Mm-hmm. So until the time when I studied at university, I've been inspired by my lectures. There were women, because I studied sports science, so I had women okay. who were teaching me sports, and they were already educated in the time of Shah, which they had freedom. And they put the seed of freedom without even telling me. They put it inside my brain and my heart. So this seed is now growing, and I would like to pass it to others. Of course, I'm not the only one. There are a lot of girls and boys inspiring others. I don't feel I'm the only one. But we just, if we can hold each other hand and hand of others, we're more powerful. So this type of feeling that I know the others and I see them, and also from the history, people who stand and speak out for the humanity, they really make me that I also go forward in this way.
Mm-hmm. Before we go back into your past a little bit, how does your day-to-day life look actually? Is there a normal day in the life of Nazim, or is any day different to the next one?
It's very interesting because my life is full of unexpected happening.
That sounds interesting.
It's very interesting. Sometimes I fell into really difficult condition, but then of course also difficult one, also the good one, they always passes. And sometimes I get this news or condition or request for a really interesting program, which always fell into my life, and I never really planned for a success of I don't know, a way through success. I always like to live the moment and enjoy the privilege, what I have, the nature, everything. And things happen. It's a lot of time difficult, a lot of time really shiny. So I always, when the shiny things happen, the good news happen, I feel like, wow, okay, so this pass worth it that this happened. So it's always all the other things which can happen, I am very welcoming them from every direction.
Yeah, okay. Makes
sometime,
sense.
Yeah, sometimes they are amazing. Sometimes they make me low. And then we come up again.
Kurze Werbung.
Du hast einfach keine Verwendung mehr für deine Kletterschuhe oder deine Kletterhose? Schon mal was von Bergzeit Reuse gehört? Aufgepasst, am Ende dieses Werbeblocks gibt es eine kleine Überraschung. Für dich ist es nur eine Kletterhose oder ein paar Kletterschuhe, die du nicht mehr brauchst. Für jemand anderes ist es eine Möglichkeit, Geld zu sparen. Und ein cooles Teil zu kaufen, das nicht jeder hat. Für unseren Planeten ist es eine Chance, aufzuatmen. Denn es werden keine neuen Ressourcen für die Herstellung benötigt und es landet nicht noch mehr auf der Mülldeponie. Hilf mit, gebrauchte Bergsportartikel länger im Kreislauf zu halten. Egal, ob du als Käufer ein Schnäppchen schlagen oder als Verkäufer Platz schaffen willst. Also, schau vorbei auf reuse.bergzeit.de. Mit dem Code KLETTERFESTIVAL15, alles klein und zusammengeschrieben, bekommst du bis zum 17. Juli 15% Rabatt auf alle Reuse-Artikel der Kategorie Klettern und Bouldern. Einfach auf reuse.bergzeit.de runterscrollen und durch die Kategorie Klettern und Bouldern stöbern. Viel Spaß beim Einkaufen und Gutes tun.
Werbung Ende.
If you would need to rate your, let's call it, life happiness right now on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 is the absolute max and everything's perfect, and 1 is like super low and you're totally unhappy, where would you rate yourself on that scale? right now?
Hey, right now in this moment, which I'm in this beautiful festival with all these people, which are we are similar, you know, we have similar passion. Of course, it's my happiness is from 10 is 12. And I think if I would say my happiness is low, it's very unfair to all the privilege which I have had in my life, because what I always feel is very tough what I want to say, but I always have one feeling inside me that I feel I had a very huge privilege of not being forced to get married on the age of 9, for example. And I am very privileged that I have not been killed by the country which I've been living or in my childhood.
That's so tough to hear, by the way.
Yes,
it's,
I know.
It's kind of unrealistic, you know, sitting face to face to each other and you're telling me, well, I'm super glad that I'm still here. It's for us, you know, being born and raised in Germany, it's crazy to hear.
Yes, of course, I can understand it. And it's a different history we had. It's just because I cannot get rid of all these rules and conditions in Iran against women, children. Like, my concern is always this, the rules which says a girl from age 9 can get married. And they really, it's not marriage, it's selling. The family are selling them to an old man. And this is really painful because I feel like this is happening in my own country. And then, of course, it happens in a lot of other countries like Afghanistan. And also then in Africa, for example, this sexual mutilation, it's for me is a really huge pain. And I feel ashamed of being a human that cannot stop this condition which is happening for other human, because I could be one of those. And I don't know, this doesn't go away from my mind. And I always feel I need to do something, even if I am powerless. But anyway, I can just do as much as one person can do. And I try my best. If I have the power one day, I would really stop all of this.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, just the idea of opening new routes and naming them after human rights, it's just nothing short than amazing, because... You know, even if people like repeat those roots, they are forced to think about it. They're forced to, you know, make decisions, talk about that, maybe do some research. Where does it come from? So I think all of these ideas have quite a big impact. I just have one more question to what you just said. You said you were lucky that you were not get married at the age of 9. Was it just being lucky, or were your parents kind of against it? How come that you weren't one of those girls?
I think I've been lucky because you never, you know, two things we never decide is like, who are our parents and where is our country? Like, these two things, we cannot even be proud of it because we didn't make it. We can be proud of what we do after. So I think it's just a luck, because we never know. Maybe the philosophy of reincarnation maybe exists. I don't know. But if it exists, probably we just move in different countries and different bodies. For me, I feel it was my privilege to be able to be born in the time that I could educate, I could have education at the school. And then, of course, I always feel that being born as a man is much more privileging all over the world, no matter where. Because I've been asking a lot, all my friends always, every time when I climb with them or like when I meet them, I always bring this question that I tell them, imagine the reincarnation is something which is exists. Would you come a woman? None of them said yes. So even my male friends, which are not macho or they are not really this way of male dominant attitude, no, they are really amazing people, always. Even those people, they don't want to be a woman. So basically, this shows that how everyone is aware of what is the life of a woman. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a very big awareness in general. So it's just, we cannot decide what to be when we born. But I think when we are healthy, this is a privilege. When we are born in a good family, is a privilege. There are a lot of them. And when we are having a healthy brain, more or less in different time. The best thing, in my opinion, is to be thankful to the privileges, to use it.
Yeah.
I was in Iran, I was thinking, why these people with this passport, they don't travel enough, mm-hmm. you know? Because we had this really, really bad passport. You can't go anywhere, you always need visa and really, really. Even when you are in other countries, when they ask you where you're from, you say your country, they know you don't have a lot of money, so you don't get enough respect, even in the hotel, or we feel it.
That's all sad, though.
It is very sad, but it's anyways the reality of the every society. But then, and beside all that, I always think, oh, if, you know, some people I met and they never travel or they never use their passport to go out of the country. And I always feel, just give me your passport.
I can use it better.
So it's a physical example of a privilege. And then imagine we have a lot of this privilege in our mind and body. And it's just not to use them is like, you just don't use your what you have. It's sad not to use them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's always a matter of perspective, right? Because if we both are talking right now, I totally get your point. And I'd say I'm more than privileged how I grew up and stuff. But, you know, if you compare yourself then to maybe others in your peer group, which were born into like a super rich family and stuff, they're so privileged.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean, right? It's always a matter of perspective. Would you say within your peer group, so you were born and raised in Tehran?
Yes.
Okay, so within your peer group, would you say you were kind of privileged compared to others because you were able to do sports and stuff, or was it more or less on the same level?
It was more or less the same level, but there were people who were less possibility to do sport. There were people who had more. Also, they could also study music, or mm-hmm. you can be an artist because is very important. So I've been privileged because my parents were educated too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one step forward. So then this would be something. I think we are always a mix, but I was grow up in a place more or less similar.
Okay, got it.
Condition with others.
Got it. And if I have done my research right, you started with kickboxing, right?
Yes.
Martial arts.
Yes.
And you were on a quite high level within national competitions.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Exactly.
Why did you stop?
Yes, I stopped it because I was the champion of Iran for years. And then it was really getting boring also because you always, you know, you want another opponent, you want to fight and
same
get
stronger. And
exactly. And then I was really ready for international competition and I could go. But the problem became that I had to cover myself. So there, where I only could compete in international competition if I cover my hair and have all the Islamic suit.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the only possibility to go, and I didn't want to give myself to the religion, which I hated it from the time when I was 7. Because when you're 7 years old, you have to start covering yourself. You go to school, you are really ugly. You can't even hold it on your body. And you have to wear it.
So early, like at the age of 7, you have to start wearing a headscarf and all of that.
Exactly, at the school.
Okay.
And because, you know, most of your time is at the school. So from 7, you go to school, you cover your hair. And I really hated it. And me and all of us, there are no, I can swear, there is not even one girl who would like to cover the hair at the age of 7 or more. If yes, there would be boys that they would like to cover. But there is, we just say like, girls, they like it. No, there is no girl who like it. We just suffered all the time. So then I found a sport because I could do it without hijab, of course. The sport, you practice in different days. Competitions are just women. When it's national.
So you're completely separated from men?
Yes.
Okay.
And then when you want to go international competition, then there are people are mixed. There are cameras, they're watching. So that's the moment which Islamic regime wants to advertise as much as possible. That is like really advertising and propaganda that they said they want this. And this moment I felt no, is impossible. Even it's my love. My gloves were very important for me. I wanted to be the champion of the world, you know, like when you have a lot of dreams. But in this moment, I said, no, it's impossible, I don't go. And I stopped it. And then it was more or less similar time, which I got introduced to the mountain and rock climbing, which was my saving rope, I think, because it was like really very much engaged moment. Then I could spend more time in the mountain, and slowly I stopped even practicing kickboxing.
Okay.
So it was a different atmosphere, more open, more wild. And that was the point I started and continue climbing.
Okay, so that makes sense how you got into climbing. Was it risky at the time to live that kind of freedom life in the mountains? Because I assume you weren't covered on the mountain. Because I think besides the religious aspect, it's very impractical as well, right? I mean, if I would imagine I would be totally covered while climbing, I mean, you know it if you're doing like ice climbing and you're in an ice fall, maybe that's kind of like the same feeling. But if you're doing like normal sport climbing and you would be totally covered, it's totally unpractical.
Unpractical and also can be dangerous because your scarf can go into the, for example, while you rappel, your scarf can go into the belay device.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It happened a lot of time that they were girls were almost out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
Because the
like strangles.
Yes, but they don't care. Like the regime doesn't care. And of course, we have the also social pressure where there is no police. We still have people which are religion. They are telling you that you have to cover your hair. So it was. I was always in danger all my life. But I think I've been just really lucky. And of course, sometime I've been arrested and I had to pay and I had to stay in this small prison for days. And, you know, my parents have to come pick me out. And then the pressure from my family is like, wow, what did you do that you were in prison?
So they weren't supportive in that kind of way?
No, like, for example, my father said, next time if you get arrested, if you call me, I would tell them I'm not her father.
Oh, wow.
So I was under pressure from both sides. Of course, the family has this pressure too because they don't want to face this condition. They don't want to go to the police office and beg them that, oh, please let my daughter come out. They also have this proud. They don't want to, you know, like, I'm not a criminal. And therefore, my parents is like, they are taking a criminal person out of the prison. It's like really unbelievable what is happening is injustice. So it's a very difficult condition, dangerous condition, which makes a lot of girls don't want to continue the sport in this way because it's just a pain and hassle. And then it's also not a cheap sport, it's expensive. So you spend your soul, your money, your time and everything, and at the end you are a criminal. So it's
It's unbelievable. I mean, to all of our listeners out there, because most of them are coming from Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and the so-called Dach region. I mean, you guys out there, just imagine being on a rock face, climbing on a normal day, and you have to be afraid of being arrested just for not being covered. It's unbelievable for us to be in such conditions. It's crazy, really.
Because it's like nothing. You do nothing bad.
Yeah.
You know, there is nothing, there is no drug, there is no, I don't know, insulting anybody, you don't kill anybody. There is nothing that is bad for humanity, it just makes humanity grow.
So it's called morality police, right?
Morality police, yes. So they come sometime to the crag.
Okay.
And they say, what are you doing here? You are standing against God? You are doing together? What is this here, you know? And then they said, you have to, it's very funny because they tell you that you have to be separated. Man on the right side of this stone and woman on the left side of this stone, like this big rock, for example, if you cannot go home. And it's just like, what are you really saying? Like, what are you? So we go home, we pack everything, we go home. The only thing is like normally walking to the crags, you have a little bit of steep path and the police is not enough fit, the one police in that city. So they really suffer if they want to reach there. So they when they come up, they really struggle this like 10 minutes steep walk, little step for us is really nothing. But then they come up and they are out of breath and they need water. We take water from us. They relax and then they start to say, why are you together here now? And sometimes they want money.
Okay.
So it's really condition, which is really you think, am I really doing a sport?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally get it. So you already mentioned in September 2022, there was this huge incident where Mahsa Amini died in custody. Or to be accurate, you always say she was killed, right?
Yeah.
Take us back in that time period. How did you receive the news?
There were two journalists, women. One of them took the picture in the hospital and another one printed out. And this was huge in the news everywhere. These girls, they were arrested years in prison. They are still under control, these two girls. So when the news came out, it was like an explosion of news all over the world. And this also was very strong, that the reason was that it was not the first time, but it was, I think it was the time which was for everybody, okay, that's enough. And this girl was too young. Like in this age, around 20, you didn't even live the life yet. Like, you know, all of us on the age of 20, we did really nothing. Just some books, we studied something, and then a little bit of, I don't know, maybe party or like friends. And they didn't even taste the real life of what is happening the next, like after the being teenager, then you are young. And this girl was not even connected with any group that they could accuse her of being with a spy of Israel or a spy of America, England or everything. She was just a very innocent girl that all of us can have, like a sister or daughter or friend. And that was a strong part of it. And that was enough for being so silent. So in this moment, I felt I also died. Because I've been in the same morality police van, I've been in the same building which he was treated and got killed. And it could be me. So I died in this day and I was ashamed of all the silence which I had on my life. Even though I was not really silent, I stopped being propaganda for the regime because I never accepted to be covered.
And you weren't even in Iran during that time, right?
No, I was not there. I was in a climbing trip in summer in Chamonix, of course. So I have never even stand with the regime. I have never even worked for them. Like as a climbing instructor, I never worked for Federation because I didn't really wanted to feed them. It was difficult to create another work because I was teaching climbing, but in a different way than the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so even though I was not a really silent person, never, still I felt I could have talked more and I didn't. So silent Nassim died and a talkative Nassim was born. So then that was my new start.
And that decision went hand in hand with your decision to not come back to Iran?
Yes, because I didn't even think of going back. And I didn't even think of not going back. When this happened, it was all of my brain and everything was just in that. And I felt, what am I doing here in Chamonix? Climbing for freedom, for my feeling. But if people are dying like this, am I really a human? Am I really a girl also? So I felt, I don't want to say with my platform what I climb only, you know, like, okay, I climb this and I climb that and people like and people enjoy and say, oh, you are very good, you are inspiring. Then I felt, in this moment, I felt I want to say also other things. They are my friends, that they like me and they enjoy what I do, like all, people from all over the world. And so I want to tell them also about the condition in Iran because I feel I'm responsible for that. I know it, so I have to say it. And I dedicated my whole page of my social media everywhere to human rights. Especially I was just dedicating it to women in Iran. So everything they did, I was posting and making stories, everything. My platform was just full. So I think, in my opinion, this is what I want to do, and what I want to do is right.
I mean, nevertheless, it's a big decision, right? I mean, I can't imagine, or we all can't imagine how it is, you know, to pack up for a couple of weeks climbing trip or a couple of months climbing trip. And then during that trip, you decide, no, I'm never going to go back home. And then you just start being active, create something like a new life. Because you said, right, talkative Nazim was born on that day or in that period of time. And I think it's not only a big challenge emotionally, but also logistically, isn't it? I mean, set up a completely new life.
And actually, yes, that's very true. And actually, what happened that I didn't even think about going back or not going back. The plan was to go back. We had the flight to go back. And we moved from Chamonix back to Milan to go back. So it was just, it happened just 2 weeks before going back in Iran. Then we were just thinking what to do. We didn't really decide. And we were thinking, no, we go back. Let's see what happened. And then I had an interview in Italy. And in this interview, there were friends which they were really worried, and they were not Iranian, they were Italian. They were really worried and they were thinking, but you really want to go back? And I said, yeah, but we have everything in Iran. We cannot just... And then we were just thinking, and another friend said, no, you cannot, you know, let's talk with another friend. Let's see what he said. And then we were thinking what to do. And it was just really spontaneous that happens that next day someone called me, a friend, and he said, at 9 o'clock in this street, let's see what we're going to do. I have a friend. We want to go to the police station to see what is the solution. So we went, and it was so funny because funny or sad, I don't know, because we didn't really expect that a decision happened, even we didn't decide. So when we went there and we just talked, and they said, you don't go back. And on the table, they gave us the document.
Oh, wow,
they accepted. We didn't even request that want to apply for asylum. But then they said, and I was thinking, what is this form here? And they said, yes, you apply for asylum. And then we said, but we didn't. So we said, can we have 10 minutes? And when we were talking with my partner, we said, but we have our life. And Sina, my partner, said, you stay. I go bring your document, because I had everything in Iran, like all my educational papers and everything. So he said, I will go, because for you is impossible and too dangerous. And the man in the police office was telling him, no, you cannot go also. If you go, it's not on my responsibility, because you're going to be dead. They're going to kill you. So, and then he said, no, but I cannot, because we have no document. There is nothing. We can't even continue our education or anything. And so that was really, everything happened really so quickly.
Yeah, it's like starting a new life from scratch.
Exactly. And it feels like the, I don't know, universe, nature, mountain, whatever, they all decided for me, put hand in hand into each other. They said, okay, Nassim. But of course, I don't want to blame this or putting on other people responsibility that, I didn't decide yet. But it was really, of course, it was, if I have to sign something, it's my decision. But things happened really out of my hands. And then I accepted it.
Sure.
I said, okay, new. Okay, we stay.
That's totally impressive. I mean, looking into the future, it's hard to predict, isn't it? How the situation is going to evolve and how the developments are. But can you give us like a foresight maybe? And maybe what's the most important thing for us as a climbing community to support the way for a better future?
What is happening in Iran is we can see that it already have shaken the world. Even we want to feel or not, it already a wave came through. And maybe now is a little bit silent in the media, but people are still fighting there. What is happening now is that we already have won this revolution. It is done because, Islamic regime is still there. They are physically there, but they don't have the mind of our new generation, because the new generation are bringing the picture of this Ayatollah down, put it on the ground, put step on it. While in the time of my parents, they've had so much fear to do this, and also they were believed that they are really holy. They came from the God and they are holy. And now the new generation, when I see these young girls, 12 years old, doing this, for me is like unbelievable. Is of course it's believable, but for me it's just like, yes, we won. And they are there and the regime is there with the gun. Okay, they put people in prison, they kill them. Okay, it's the, physically they are killing them. But they don't have the mind. Because if you can look at the history, 45 years, all this budget on making this country a Muslim country is failed. So if you cannot imagine how much budget they involved in the Islamic centers in Iran, they also do outside Iran. But this, to wash my brain, to wash my partner brains, to wash others, and now the new generation, this is just like amazing. This is a one revolution. They have nothing. They are now trying to hold onto power with the help of other countries, you know, like with the help of gun. But it's impossible that they can have the mind of the Iranian people. And other thing is like, I think Iran, I don't know, I'm not a patriotic person who want to say Iran is the best country. Well, no, every country has its own heritage and history and culture, and it is respectful and beautiful. But almost all the countries which have been attacked by Arabs in the history, they don't have their language anymore. They all became Arabs. But Iran, they are still talking Farsi. 2 centuries of resistance to keep the languages there. So we Iranian people, okay, with our professors and teachers and poets and all these people, they hold our language. And when I look at this part of the history, only the language, I can see that how much we resist in having our culture and what we have from the time of Cyrus, which was the law for workers, which is now in the United Nations, is written on this stone. So it's still in the gene of Iranian people, looks like. And so they hold into it. And 45 years of oppression, the high wall around Iran with censor and no open media, our new generation, they don't want this religion. They hate it. So this shows a lot. This shows a lot about the power of humanity. And I really feel that I want to show this and tell it to everyone in the world, because it's important to know. I'm sure when you're listening to this, you feel like, ah, yes, we are human. We can do it. And I'm sure you have the similar example in your history. And you would think of that, and you would think, oh yes, we have that, we have to keep it, we have to. It doesn't mean that tradition have to be always and we don't need to change. Change is the best part, and I love the change.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the resistance and the language, or like the everything, it's just this beautiful. So what is happening in the future is already happened. So we won, we are there, and it makes me really happy. It is the fuel that makes me to talk more, to say more. And it's the fuel that lets me drop my sponsors if they don't have this flame inside them. And I think that's all.
I think that are the perfect ending words for this episode. Thank you so much. It's so inspiring talking to you, to be honest. And I think one thing that I really understood and will take with me out of this podcast is that talking out loud, or, you know, just being a human and talking about the things you think, is not something politically, and is not something that stands you out in a certain direction. It's just a human thing. Absolutely. And I think, yeah, you really just need to think about that, and then you understand it, but it's a process.
Exactly. No, absolutely. It never can be a life of 7 years old child or 9 years old girl. It cannot be political. It is human rights, and we're all going to talk about it. And I think what would be my message of to the mountain community is just that we are very strong. We are very powerful. We are our mind. We are always overcoming our limits in our practice, in our project, in the mountain. We are so powerful that is more than just talking about our project. If each of us have to find a message, have to find a meaning for to hold the freedom that they have, you know, like, okay, you have the freedom here of talk. Of course, it's not 100%, but to keep it, to hold it, because we had freedom and we lost it in 1979. So it's a lesson which says, if you don't talk about it, you're gonna lose it. Because some people were fighting for you to have freedom now. You have liberation now because of your past generation, which were fighting and getting killed for you. So take it, use it, and speak out for others to give this freedom to others. When we all have freedom, is much more beautiful than just me having freedom and others in the jail.
No, that's true. And I mean, that's what we mountain people are looking forward to the most, right?
Sure.
Freedom is the main thing. So I'm sure you're on a pretty good path. And thank you so much for taking the time. It's been really special. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you're doing next and try to support as best as I can.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me, for the opportunity to be the voice of freedom. I feel more powerful even now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Das war die Interviewfolge mit Nazim Eshki. Ich weiß nicht, wie es euch geht, aber mich hat das Gespräch zum Nachdenken gebracht. Klar ist man sich der Tatsache schon irgendwie bewusst, dass an vielen Orten der Welt das Thema Menschenrechte völlig missachtet wird. Und dennoch fühlt man sich als Individuum doch recht oft etwas machtlos. Zumindest geht's mir so. An Nazims Beispiel zu sehen, dass auch wir als Bergsport-Community unsere Stimme für mehr Gerechtigkeit erheben können, das macht Mut. Und wenn ich jetzt meinen Leidenschaften draußen in den Bergen nachgehe, dann weiß ich diese Freiheit einfach noch unglaublich viel mehr zu schätzen. Lass uns gemeinsam dieses Privileg erhalten und vor allem weiter verbreiten. In diesem Sinne, viel Spaß bei eurer Bergzeit und passt bitte gut auf euch auf. Ach ja, wenn euch der Podcast gefallen hat und ihr gerne auch noch mehr englischsprachige Gäste hier hören wollt, dann lasst uns gerne einen Kommentar, ein Abo oder eine Review da. Wir hören uns dann in der nächsten Folge des Bergzeit-Podcasts. Bis dahin, danke fürs Zuhören. Ciao, ciao, euer Jan.